Morning all. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for the 14th of July 2022 will come to order. We have a late submitted document.
Yes, we do. Mr. Chairman, I move that the commission consider draft advisory opinion 2022-14. Extension of comment period, and that the commission determine pursuant to 11 CFR section 2.7 parens D and parens parens 1 and parens that business so requires and no earlier public announcement was possible. I further move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 22-27-B and 22-29-A.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. Colleagues, any discussion of the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
The motion is carried unanimously. First matter on our agenda is the aforementioned extension of comment period in the draft advisory opinion 2022-14 for Google LLC. This represents a motion from my office. As I think my colleagues all know, the commission inadvertently noticed the 11th of July rather than the 16th of July as the conclusion of the statutorily mandated 10-day period for the submission of comments in this matter, which occasioned some confusion and was quite properly pointed out by one of the commenters who have already filed. Accordingly, I thought it prudent to exercise our discretion under the regulations to extend the time for comments. I chose the 5th of August because that represents the Friday before the open meeting at which I expect to discuss this matter. With that background, there's a motion in front of us, but any comments? Ms. Weintraub.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for presenting the motion. I'd be happy to move it on your behalf since the chairman doesn't usually move motions. And I also thought this was appropriate to extend the comment period for the reasons that you stated, but also because there seems to be quite a lot of interest in this one, and we don't want to cut off the comment, the public from airing their views to us before we have an opportunity to vote on the advisory thing.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Traynor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you bringing this in front of the commission. And just for the public's knowledge, I was the one who objected to this extension, mainly because I wanted to take this opportunity to talk about the advisory opinion process, because I think the advisory opinion process is probably one of the best actions that the commission takes, and it's one that is underutilized. And I appreciate that Google has brought forward their request for us to consider. But I also have some concerns about how we deal with the advisory opinion process. You know, these days campaigns move at a speed that's, you know, 24-hour, 48-hour cycles. And we here at the commission tend to move in 30-day and 60-day cycles. And it's one where I think we do a disservice to the public, and we do a disservice to those that are regulated by Congress under the statute that we oversee by moving at such a slow process. Here, we're moving to extend time for a comment period where the public has nothing to comment on. We don't have a document out there for them to look at to say what our opinion is or isn't. The comments that we've received up to this point are, don't do this. And that may very well be the answer that we give to Google. It may be that we allow Google to do that, but we don't have a document out there for the public to comment on. So it's unfortunate that we're extending a comment period and not really giving a full view to the public of actually what it is that the commission is considering. And even when we do put out a document for the public to consider, we have, since my time here, we've had this bad habit of putting out a document, receiving comments on it, and then waiting until the last minute, including up to the beginning of the meeting. And my understanding in the past, we've even made documents public during a meeting that are alternative drafts. And so, you know, I think this slow, meticulous process that we go through, while it may be necessary, I think it's important for us to recognize that the regulated community is moving much quicker than we are. And while we have to get the answer right, we also need to be mindful of how quickly we need to move. Now, as you said, there was an error in our July 8th digest with regard to this. And so I intend to support your motion this morning because, again, we have to get it right every single time and we need to correct that. But I would like for the commission to be mindful of us moving more methodically through this, but quickly when we go through this advisory opinion process, because as I said, I think it's probably the most important process that we have available to the public here. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Further discussion? All in favor? Or pardon me. Let's see if I can get my own procedure right. Commissioner Weintraub?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to make the motion first. I will just note before I make the motion that our procedures, our aim under our procedures is to have documents out a week in advance of the meeting, and that would give the public more time to comment on the actual drafts. Right now, they're just commenting on the request itself, which is part of the statute that they have the opportunity to comment on the request. I think that, you know, it's always better if we can get the documents out earlier so that the public has a chance to comment. Deadlines have a way of focusing the mind. And if at the last minute where we are able to cobble together an agreement that can get four votes where there wasn't one a week in advance, well, then that's an improvement if we can give it an answer, even if it isn't out on the public record as much in advance of the meetings. I think we all would prefer. I'm perfectly happy to pledge to work with my colleagues to try and get those documents out earlier. Having said that, pursuant to 11 CFR section 112.3B, I move that the commission extend the public comment period for advisory opinion request 2022-14 until Friday, August 5th, 2022.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Weintraub. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you very much, all. Next matter on our agenda is draft advisory opinion 2022-06, the Hispanic Leadership Trust. Mr. Wang of the Hilliard Law Firm is here to answer questions from the commission, as is Ms. Selinkoff of the Office of General Counsel.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
Agenda document 22-28A contains a draft response to an advisory opinion request by Hispanic Leadership Trust, or HLT. HLT is a non-connected committee with the mission of electing Hispanic Republican candidates to Congress. It expects its initial board will consist of all but one current members of the Congressional Hispanic Conference. And HLT proposes to name two of those members as its chair and vice chair. HLT presented its proposed bylaws, including three fundraising specific alternatives, and asks whether it would be a leadership PAC or affiliated with the chair or vice chair's existing leadership PACs. The draft concludes that under the bylaws with proposed fundraising alternative C, HLT would not be a leadership PAC of either the chair or vice chair or affiliated with those representatives' existing leadership PACs. The commission received one comment on the draft from the requester, and we're available for any questions y'all have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Counselor. Mr. Wang, I'd like to start with a couple of questions. But prior to that, let me express some sympathy for the position you find yourself in. This has occasioned a deep dive by my office, and I suspect by my colleagues, on the history and all of this, and I've been struck again and again in that effort by the daylight between the statute, which I've read a fair number of statutes in my time, and I haven't seen a lot where a list is not set off with commas, but rather, you know, here I'm quoting from the statute. We talk about political committees, quote, established or financed or maintained or controlled by any corporation. And the Federal Election Commission, in its wisdom, has conflated those four factors into a 10-factor balancing test. I'm sure there's probably some echoes of that in some of the litigation that's happened over the last few years. That being said, I did have a couple of questions for you as I've sort of wrestled with this, and in particular with the question of affiliation and the fact that both the statute and our regulations talk about groups that are established, financed, maintained, or controlled, which I'm going to call EFMCing, which will confuse everyone who doesn't do this for a living, but that's what dependency at this point. EFMC groups by groups of persons. That's both in the statute and in the regulation. And I guess my question to you is, given the facts of the board control of your clients, how do we give effect to that language?
I'm not sure I have a good answer to that question. I think it's, you know, it's just the fact that, you know, quite frankly, I don't know. I mean, I think Draft A does a good job of coming to, you know, arriving at an approach that our client can live with, and that's consistent with the practice of some of the other PACs out there that we identified in our request. And Draft A provides sufficient guidance for us to allow members of Congress to be involved in our clients' activities and our clients' governance. We did have some concerns with how Draft A treats the contributions that were made by the leadership PACs of the proposed chair and vice chair of this committee. We don't think that Draft A's analysis on that point makes a whole lot of sense. But in terms of your more general question about EFMC, I think it's, you know, the commission has taken sort of a know it when I see it approach on this issue, and it sort of makes it up as it goes along in the enforcement process and in the AO process. You know, it sort of picks at random certain thresholds where of involvement by members of Congress, certain thresholds of financing by members of Congress, and deems the, you know, certain instances of those activities to be to trigger EFMC and affiliation findings, and certain instances when it doesn't. But there's no sort of bright line rules under either the commission's regulations or the precedents. So, I mean, that's why I don't have a very good answer for your general question.
No, and that's fair, and I'll move on to the actual content of the EFMC test. But you know, the question I think is most challenging on your facts is EFMC by whom, and that, you know, strikes me as going to sort of the heart of the statutory interpretation question. You know, does the group of persons that's controlling more than one PAC have to be exactly the same group of persons? How much overlap is too much? You know, and I'm not convinced either the statute or our regulations give us especially good guidance on that point. So I wanted to flag it for you in case you did have a good answer. But we can move on to the rest of it. I tend to agree with you for what that's worth on the financing issue, and I appreciate your comments that pointed out the sort of strange way in which we treat financing as part of the establishment test instead of as part of the financing test in some cases, and in some cases as part of the financing test. And I think that point is well made, and frankly is an argument that's much better situated in the statute, given again that these things are set off by ORs, which is an unusual level of emphasis from Congress. But you know what? I guess my question is, who ultimately controls HLT?
Well, under the proposed bylaw provisions, you know, under one of our alternatives, it would be the entire board of directors of HLT. So under the current membership of the Hispanic Congressional Conference, that would be a board of eight members.
That's my question is, I understand the board controls the organization. Does the entire board control the organization, or does a majority of the board control of an organization? And does it matter on these facts?
Well, I think you're right. Technically, a majority vote under the proposed bylaw provisions, a majority of the board would essentially control the committee.
Right. And I guess another question on those lines. There's been some back and forth on what the proposed bylaws would look like in terms of how the board would be formed and what its composition would be. And I understand you're in the position of sort of asking for guidance on precisely that matter while we ask you questions about how you plan to do it. And you know that you could probably power a good sized city on the circular motion from that argument. But my question is, does your request contemplate a board, a majority of which does not control leadership paths? By analogy, essentially a board controlled by independent directors.
No,
contemplated?
I think your question was, would a majority of the board also control their own leadership packs? Did I hear you correctly on that?
So leaving aside, the first question I asked you was controlled by whom? And that question doesn't become relevant if no one involved in any of this controls the ultimate organization. Mm-hmm. So we've got various approaches to the board, and you've got at least three examples which are largely keyed towards the finance aspect of this, which I understand. What I don't know is whether your request anticipates a board which would be controlled in the sense that a majority of the directors would not be people who under any argument are EMFCing or EFMCing rather, another PAC.
I think
members of Congress and three of their council, fill in the facts however you like, but basically where a majority of the board clearly is not caught up in any of those.
So I think in practice, each of the members of the board is likely to have their own leadership packs. And typically a leadership pack is considered to be controlled exclusively by one congressional sponsor, member of Congress. And here, this is a pack that is not controlled exclusively by any one member of Congress. And so under the common understanding of a leadership pack, I think draft A correctly concludes that this Hispanic Leadership Trust, given its governance structure, is not a leadership pack because it requires, it's not controlled by any single member of Congress. It's a board of members. Yes, individually, each one probably will have their own leadership pack, but those leadership packs should not be considered affiliated with Hispanic Leadership Trust because HLT is, it takes more than one member of Congress to control HLT.
I understand that argument. I'm asking something about the scope of your request, which is HLT only interested in a board controlled by members of the caucus?
Is it only interested? Was that your question?
Yes.
No, I mean, if it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. I mean, we were interested in that potential option, but if the FEC were to issue an opinion saying that, a majority of the board cannot have members of Congress on its board, I think if that's what the commission arrived at, that is something that we could live with.
Now that's helpful. Somewhat related question. I read your request as being directed to any member of the Congress any potential member of the board of directors, not solely the proposed chair and vice chair. For good and sufficient reasons, the analysis, at least of the public draft, is keyed towards the role of the chair and the vice chair. Can you say a little bit about the specific powers you envision for those officers and why they would not control the entity, given those delegations from the board?
Yeah, so I also picked up on that nuance, I guess, or quirk in the draft. The draft does focus more on the chair and vice chair But you are correct in that our request also asked more broadly about the other members of the board of directors. And we did want to confirm that HLT would not be considered to be EFMC'd or affiliated with EFMC by any of those other members of the board, and also not affiliated with the leadership PACs of any of the other members of those boards. In terms of what level of quote unquote control we envision by the chair and the vice chair, I think the level of control would be typical of any control exercise by individuals typically holding those titles. But under draft A, it concludes that if those two individuals had to act in conjunction with the other members of the board, and all major decisions had to be made by a majority vote of the board of directors, then under draft A, the authority of the chair and the vice chair would be quote unquote diluted by the votes of those other members of the board of directors. And so in that sense, the proposed chair and vice chair would not be controlling between the two of them, HLT. And that's something we understand. We understand where draft A is coming from in that respect.
Well, I guess two related questions. I mean, first, not to put too fine a point on it, but sometimes you have a situation where the control group of an organization, for lack of a better term, is subject to oversight by an evenly divided supervisory body with the possibility of deadlock. And in such circumstances, it may be that a person with such delegated authority essentially has a level of autonomy that is not necessarily anticipated by the bylaws. So I guess that'd be my first question as regards draft A is what's your response to that? And relatedly, in the context of, I suspect that the powers that are granted by the board to the chair or vice chair are going to be relevant. I noticed that one of your drafts specifically left questions of how funds were to be distributed in terms of the contributions that were going to be made to board votes, which I think is a pretty strong factor against control. But there's also a line in one of your responses about how the expectation is that day-to-day management would be handled by contractors. And it seemed to me, though it wasn't clear, that a good reading of your request was that the intention was to have those contractors be selected by board vote. So could you, I guess, spell out a little bit of what you, I don't see this as a pure sort of CEO level delegation, given what is in some of these papers. I'm wondering which powers you intend or expect will be subject to the board vote and which powers will be essentially delegated.
Yeah, so I mean, to address your first question about deadlocks and I guess the analogy to the commission.
I thought I was being subtle.
I'm sorry?
I thought I was being subtle.
Well, I think the proposed bylaw provisions would sort of be parallel to how the commission operates. With the 8-member board initially being contemplated, it is an even number, and so it's possible that there could be deadlocks. And under the proposed bylaw provisions, any decision of the board requires a majority vote. And so if it's a 4-4 deadlock, that is not a majority, and the motion would not carry. The board would not be able to act. I mean, the chairman and the vice chair would not be able to override the vote of the board of directors under draft A. And so
can I jump in?
Yes.
I'm specifically thinking about, say, a 2-member board, which is one of the things that's anticipated. So the analogy wouldn't be, organizational officer decision goes out to the board and the board deadlocks. It would be that the officer controls half the board and therefore can force a deadlock.
Right.
And does that mean that that officer essentially controls the organization?
I mean, that's sort of a philosophical question. I mean,
well, do you expect an officer to vote against their decision in a board meeting? I mean, that seems surprising to me.
Do I expect an officer to vote against?
The chair takes a decision. The vice chair doesn't like it. It is taken to a board meeting for overrule. The chair votes in favor of the decision taking. The vice chair votes against. The board splits 50-50, therefore failing or declining, depending on your philosophy, to overturn the decision of that chair. The chair is in a position to prevent any oversight of the chair's decisions. Is that control?
I'm not sure I follow your scenario.
Okay, so one of the things you suggested is we're going to have two board members, a chairman and a vice chairman. So far, am I right?
I'm not sure that that's actually something we specifically contemplated in our proposal, a board of only two members. I don't think that's what we were proposing.
Then I misunderstood your request. It's fine. If that's not what you're contemplating, then that eliminates that objection.
We were proposing a board of the entire Congressional Hispanic Conference, which is more than two members. I mean, it's theoretically possible that at some point the Congressional Hispanic Conference could consist of only two members, but we don't think that's likely, and that's not what's immediately being contemplated.
Okay, that leaves me, that still does leave the second question of what powers are being delegated.
Yeah, I think, just the day-to-day activities, the administrative functions, for example, would be carried on by contractors. Members of Congress, of course, are very busy with all sorts of other, all sorts of other legislative activities. So they can't be involved in micromanaging the day-to-day activities of the committee. Make more major decisions, including the hiring of the vendors themselves and the consultants. That is a function we would contemplate being assumed by the board of directors and the officers. Major decisions like which candidates that the committee contributes to, which is really major function of this of the PAC, those would be made by the board of directors as well.
That's very helpful. That's all the questions I had. I really appreciate your time. Alex? Enjoying my discussion with Mr. Wang. So, sorry if I ran over anyone. Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Mr. Wang. It's always a pleasure to see you again.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I just wanted to state for the record that this was not a draft that I was likely to support. There's been some work in the background. There's another draft in the background that I held off on making public because it wasn't clear that that would get support. We didn't want to confuse the requester or the public with having multiple drafts out there, and everybody's trying to figure out, well, what's the operative draft? Where are they really going with this? So just want to assure you there have been discussions, and I expect there will be at least one more draft forthcoming, and perhaps we'll even be able to answer your question. So I appreciate that you were willing to give us a little bit more time to work that out. And mindful of the previous discussion, I'm hopeful that we can get a draft out to the public, not at the last minute before the next meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Always best to be clear in such matters. Colleagues, any further questions? Mr. Wang, with our thanks for your attendance and for especially answering all of my questions about your request. And I think at least most of our appreciation, perhaps all of our appreciation for the extension. I look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Our next matter on our agenda is draft advisory opinion 2022-09, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Ms. Lopez, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Ms. Fillmer for the Office of General Counsel. Please go ahead, Counselor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is Agenda Document 22-26-A, a draft advisory opinion responding to a request from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin Federal. The requester asks whether it may form a joint fundraising committee with a nominee fund that has been established for the eventual Democratic Party nominee for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin. The draft concludes that the proposal is permissible because it is consistent both with the Commission's regulation governing joint fundraising activities and with prior Commission advisory opinions concerning the solicitation of contributions on behalf of a yet determined recipient. We did not receive any comments on the request or the draft. Thank you, and I would be happy to address any questions you may have.
Thank you, Councilor. Colleagues, questions for Council? Commissioner Cookson? Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Ms. Lopez. Good to see you again. You didn't submit any written comments as you have for other advisory opinion requests, but I would be interested in anything you want to make known or any views you want to express about the one draft we have made public in response to your request.
Thank you, Commissioner. It's very nice to see you and all of the commissioners again as well. The first thing I actually want to say is I want to just thank the staff here. This opinion is obviously involves a complex set of facts, and I just so much appreciated the attention to detail they demonstrated to ensuring this could move quickly. We asked for an expedited turnaround due to the primary being very soon. And I think the commission staff was just excellent in ensuring that the commission had everything it needed facts-wise to decide. So I wanna just really highlight that because I'm very grateful as a practitioner for that. But otherwise, I didn't offer any comments just because I'm fully supportive of the draft. I think it's absolutely right on the law. I think the conditions it sets out are clear, provide really good guidance to the regulated community. So I'm very supportive of it and grateful to the commission for its consideration.
Thank you, Counselor, and thank you for the kind words for our staff, which I hope leadership will convey to any who are not present. Further discussion? Any motions? Commissioner Cookson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to draft advisory opinion 2022-09, Democratic Party of Wisconsin Federal, I move approval of agenda document number 22-26-A, which is draft A.
Thank you, Commissioner Cookson. Any discussion of the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much, Council. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next matter on our agenda is draft advisory opinion 2022-07. Ms. Helmsley for the Office of General Counsel. Please go ahead, Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, good morning to you. Agenda document 2022-27A and 2022-27B contain draft responses to a request from Congressman Eric Swalwell and his principal campaign committee, Swalwell for Congress. Congressman Swalwell is currently a federal candidate and an incumbent office holder. He and his wife both work full-time and have three small children at home. The request asks whether Congressman Swalwell may use campaign funds to pay for overnight childcare when he is traveling for his own campaign or for other campaigns. The request also asks whether campaign funds may be used to pay for childcare expenses incurred by the congressman when he and his spouse travel in response to invitations received because of his official status or duties. Both drafts A and B conclude that Congressman Swalwell may use campaign funds to pay for childcare expenses incurred when he travels for his own campaign and his spouse is unavailable to care for their children. The drafts differ on whether campaign funds may be used to pay for childcare when the congressman travels for other campaigns or in response to invitations received because of his official status or duties. Draft A concludes that campaign funds may not be used to pay for childcare in those situations because it would convert campaign funds, to personal use. Draft B concludes that Congressman Swalwell may use campaign funds to pay for childcare expenses in these situations because it would not convert campaign funds to personal use. We received no comments on the request and one comment this morning on the draft. Thank you, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Council. Let me also add that Rebecca Olson of Miller and Olson LLP is here on behalf of the representative. Colleagues, any questions? Mr. Cooksey.
Thank you very much. Thanks to OGC for the presentation. For Ms. Olson, I guess I have some questions about your understanding of the application of our personal use statute and regulations to this request. First, I guess, you know, for the benefit of everyone, you agree that the test that the commission applies, which comes from the statute, is what we call the irrespective test, right? Which asks whether the expense that's being proposed to be paid with campaign funds would exist irrespective of the candidate's campaign or official duties. In other words, if it's an expense that would exist outside of the campaign or official duties, using campaign funds for that expense is personal use. If it's something that arises from the campaign or official duties, then it's generally permissible. Do you agree that that's sort of the relevant standard we apply?
Definitely.
So I guess then, can you walk me through the reasoning for how at-home childcare services, I guess in this case it's nanny services, wouldn't exist irrespective of Representative Swalwell's, in this case, your request largely revolves around official duties. So I guess explain to me why or how this expense arises from or wouldn't exist irrespective of his official duties.
Sure. There's a couple of ways in which that happens. As the drafts say here, there's a couple of, you know, situations where we're asking, you know, specifically for guidance on this. I think the reason we're asking for advice is it because it did seem a little bit squishy to us when we were going through. I think, you know, as both drafts say, there's no question that, you know, when we're talking about specific campaign events or travel that's specific to the congressman's campaign, that it's permissible and obviously uses, is clear in the irrespective test that, you know, funds can be used for that. There, you know, we come across a lot of questions in the campaign because, you know, Congressman Swalwell in his position gets a lot of requests to appear, to travel, to assist other candidates. And, you know, as well as, you know, traveling for official duties, things like that, it seemed, you know, the FEC had given very, you know, clear advice that was okay for childcare. Where I think our questions came up and where I think it's, you know, the difference there in between draft A and draft B was that, you know, there's no question, I think, that these requests would not come to someone who wasn't Congressman Swalwell, wasn't Eric Swalwell, you know, regular citizen. And so that's where we're trying to determine, whereas some childcare requests, you know, then the prior advice letters say, well, you know, it's very clear that, you know, doing so for your own campaign, you know, is a permissible use. There comes to be these kind of squishier lines where, you know, you're campaigning for someone else, you know, does that involve your, you know, does that then come back to the irrespective test? Well, you know, irrespective of his candidacy or his position in House leadership, would he get these requests? And so I think, you know, we're looking specifically from the commission as to the guidance on that.
Mr. Cooksey.
Mr. Chairman. Do you agree that the statute that covers personal use conversion doesn't speak to expenses that arise from someone else's campaign? I mean, quoting from the statute, it says it speaks only to uses to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duty as a holder of federal office.
Yes, so the statute, I agree.
So you agree the statute then wouldn't cover on its own terms expenses that arise from other candidates' campaigns?
Yeah, I think that is a reasonable interpretation of it. I think that where, you know, when I was working, you know, with staff on this, you know, the question was whether his position as, you know, in-house leadership and his, you know, charge to get additional Democrats elected to Congress, you know, whether that was the difference there, right? I think there's no question you're raising campaign funds and you're using it to support your own campaign. And that, you know, trying to figure out where the line is could be personal use there. But to, you know, I think in terms of the irrespective test, there's a little more gray area there.
The German, keep going. So I guess, let me ask more specifically then about how you apply the irrespective test. Is it that he has children for which he and his wife normally provide their own childcare during certain periods, but as a result of official travel, let's say, he is then no longer able to provide his own childcare, and that necessitates the expense of having to provide alternative childcare, having to pay for childcare in his stead. Is that sort of your theory of the irrespective test and how it would apply here and why it would be authorized, or am I misunderstanding?
No, I think what we're trying to say in this sense is that there are many times in which, you know, childcare is needed for them. They both work full time, right? So what we're trying to determine is there are plenty of times in which the reason that they're needing the childcare is, is a reason unrelated to Eric's campaign or, you know, official duties. And those are paid for by personal funds. You know, no question. It was very clear cut. The question became, well, if the reason we're needing this service is because of travel for, you know, campaign events for other people and or anything connected to his official duties, would that be a permissible use? And that's kind of the narrow use. It's, I guess the question is, are we saying that I think in that sense, then if they are not traveling or not available because of, you know, these scenarios we've mentioned, is that a permissible use of the campaign funds?
Ms. German, I agree that's the question you're asking. Can you explain to me why the answer should be yes, you are allowed to do that under the irrespective test?
I think, yes, I think I can. I feel like I've struggled back and forth so many times when going back and forth that it's not an easy question. I think for us, the irrespective test, you know, would apply here in the sense that regular citizen Eric Swalwell would not get any of these requests to travel for other candidates, especially, and part of his duties as House leadership, he would not get these requests otherwise. And so, no one's asking regular citizen to come and, you know, promote their candidacy. So what our argument here is that irrespective of his position, both as a member of House leadership and as a candidate himself, and someone who supports other candidates for office, that these, you know, childcare expenses would not exist irrespective of that.
Ms. Sherman, can you let me know, or I guess I have some questions about sort of the limits of that logic. Under that logic of the irrespective test, would Representative Swalwell, do you think, be authorized to use campaign funds to pay for dog sitting while he were traveling? If normally he would take care of his own dog, but he's unable to because of his request for travel, can he use campaign funds to pay someone to come and do that service for him?
I don't really know. Haven't really thought about it that way, but I think we, based on prior advice from the commission on, you know, childcare being permissible and basically not being able to do your job otherwise, I think there's a distinction there between children and dogs. And I wouldn't necessarily think that was an extension of the rule.
Well, what's the difference? I guess they're both services or things he would normally do on his own as regular citizen Swalwell, to use your phrasing, but that he is now unable to do because he's taking official travel. Why should the rule be he can pay for one but not the other? And what's the legal reason for that distinction?
I don't think I can answer that question. I think there's a difference in terms of, you know, having a duty to take care of your children that they need to be supervised. You know, a dog can stay home all day, you know, without assistance. But, you know, I I see your point.
You're asking about official travel, but you know the regulation speaks to official duties in general. Do you think this would also cover periods in which Representative Swalwell is in Washington, D.C. for a congressional work period?
We didn't find the need to ask that question, as generally in the congressman and his family reside in D.C. as much as possible to be together. So to us, that wasn't a factual, question that needed answering here. So in that sense, we hadn't considered it, and I'm not sure it would.
Well, I guess explain to me the difference then. What's the difference between taking an official trip and doing your 9-to-5 job? If both are part of your official duties as a representative, wouldn't both then entitle you to use campaign funds for childcare?
I think that's where the question, maybe so, but I think there is a question that whether the job, whatever the job was in this sense, it could exist irrespective. In this sense, we just didn't have the facts to appeal to that. I see what you're saying in terms of trying to determine where the legal line is. But I think in this sense, the 9-to-5, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. What I really think is, I think of that more in terms of like the daily commute and someone not being available. And I do understand that, may be the case if you're doing official duties, you're at the Capitol and doing your official duties, that it could apply.
Mr. Chairman, that's helpful to know. We're answering an advisory opinion, but we're setting out a legal rule and a legal interpretation of the personal use. And I think it's important to understand that the rule set out in draft B, which I'll call the yes draft, would open the door to the use of campaign funds for childcare during work periods, maybe dog sitting services, maybe any other services that a member of Congress might perform themselves that is interfered with because of official travel. Suppose that Representative Swalwell came to you and said, this weekend I was planning to paint my house. I have all the stuff at my house. I've got all the paints. I was going to spend the whole weekend painting my house, but I've just been asked to do an official trip overseas and now I can't do it anymore. It's interfering with my plans to paint my house. Can I use campaign funds to pay someone to paint my house now that this has been occasioned by my official travel? Do you think that would be allowed under the logic of draft B?
I don't. I think that the painting of the house, and the services, is just different than childcare is. And it really just, a line has to be drawn there.
If I can interrupt you, what is your legal argument for in the statute or in our regulations that they're different?
I think that the difference is just the plain irrespective test. The obligation that to paint the house or feel the need to paint your house exists irrespective of whether or not you're a member of Congress, whether you're traveling as a member of Congress, or whether you're traveling as part of your campaign. Painting the house is not the same thing as ensuring your children are taken care of.
So, but do you have any statutory or regulatory authority for that distinction?
No, other than, when we're discussing childcare specifically, both the irrespective test, I think, can easily be applied, not applied to the painting of the house situation. And there are, two advisory opinions specifically on the childcare issue for campaign related expenses. So I don't think we're taking a leap here in terms of, creating some whole new ability to use campaign funds for any sort of services you thought were possible, but that were, naturally extending, the prior commission opinions on childcare specifically.
Mr. Chairman, I guess a question for policy. I would like your views on whether under the logic of draft B, a congressperson could spend campaign funds for dog sitting occasioned by official travel.
Chairman.
Commissioner Weintraub, and then we're gonna go back to the question.
Well, I'd like to jump in and give my own perspective on that, if my colleague will allow, because I think he's been what in other contexts might be called badgering the witness. We have somebody who comes before the commission and asks for advice on a specific transaction. And that is the way the advisory opinion process works. They pose a specific transaction and we give them an answer on that specific transaction. And anybody who is contemplating activities that are not within the four corners of that request and the facts of that request cannot rely on this to do other activities that are not asked or answered here. This is not a request about dog sitting. It is not a request about 9-to-5 childcare during the normal workday. It is a request about a specific set of circumstances that the requester has proposed are related directly to his campaign and to his official duties and to his status, not only as a candidate himself, but as a member of the leadership, which is also related to his official duties and his campaign duties. And we have, childcare is not in the regulations. That is why they come to us, because we are left with the irrespective test and the case by case determination. Under these facts, these specific facts that have been suggested, I believe that what the requester has asked for is very much in line with other requests that we have granted. And I'm prepared to support draft B, which I think is in line with commission precedents and would apply the irrespective test to these specific facts and would not, and just to be clear, nobody can use this as permission to pay for their dog sitter.
Mr. Weintraub, I think it's very unlikely a judge would consider that line of question badgering, but I take that point. There is still a question on the table, which I think Commissioner Cooksey is entitled to get an answer to. You'd like to restate it, Commissioner?
Sure, my question was to policy, and my question is what their view is of the logic of draft B and whether it would authorize a candidate to use campaign funds to pay for dog sitting services that were occasioned by official travel.
I mean, as to specifically dog sitting, that would be up to the commission. I mean, on the one hand, I can see where we would say yes, and we would, it depending on the facts presented. But I mean, note that that would have to be reported on their report. I would. Note that just since we're asking specifically about draft B, the yes answer for that has a sort of a however on the end of it, in that any expenses to associated with travel that involves, you know, personal activities and campaign or office holder activities, that the incremental expenses that result from the personal activities are personal use. I mean, I think that's something that the dog sitting is something the commission would have to consider, given all the facts and circumstances that are presented. But you know, we have advisory opinions, for example, 1997-11, which applies the logic in the draft B response, where a member of Congress asked whether she could travel to and pay for a language immersion course. And the commission said yes. However, make sure I get this right, activities that were offered at the resort where the course was being held, such as greens fees or, you know, spa treatments, are personal use. So it's the incremental expense that the commission has previously held as personal use. But dog sitting, I mean, I suspect there are two answers floating around at the table, and in, you know, my mind, I've been back and forth on it, but we would have to consider that when it comes in.
Can I ask a couple clarifying questions before we go further? I mean, one, it's not anything that exists irrespective. It's a commitment, obligation, or expense that would exist irrespective. Does that list provide any guidance under the statute for what would be in or inside or outside the bucket?
I'm sorry, is that a question for me or for council?
Well, let me ask it if council is making the request, because
yeah,
that's the statutory language.
Yeah, you're right. You know, obviously you have the, you know, there's no question, there's the obligation to take care of your children, you know, one way or the other, right? You know, and the children exist irrespective as well. But the question becomes then whether, you know, that expense only existed because of, you know, this particular time. And as we, you know, as we are, we'll clearly state, and we, you know, we'll state in our opinion and here, you know, there are times where, you know, the childcare is necessary, and not because of, you know, Congressman Swalwell's, you know, duties. So that in those times, you know, those are paid by personal funds. So, you know, there is that question of whether, you know, it is existing irrespective. And I think childcare is just one of those unusual things. One, it being, you know, extremely expensive, especially for multiple children, where it does make a difference, you know, where you're paying that from if you're not a, you know, a wealthy member of Congress, but, you know, where that differs from dog sitting as well, you know, but, you know, would the obligation to take care of the kids exist irrespective? Sure. But I think in this sense, you know, we've determined that this particular time, you know, when you're off doing official duties and our campaign events, that then would not exist irrespective.
Well, I hope we're never asked to opine on the causality of any particular child. So we'll leave that aside. But a follow-up on your sort of test of you're only getting these invitations because you're a member of Congress, that gave me some pause. And this is another area where I'm sort of, you know, you have official duties, and we need to define that concept for purposes of your AO. So I don't think we're outside your request and asking questions about what the test is. And it occurred to me that, you know, there are a lot of things for which one receives an invitation as a member of Congress that one might not receive as a member of the public prior to election. I mean, I'd also say, you know, the other difference between being a candidate or a member of the general public and being an elected member of Congress is that you pull a salary as a member of Congress. So you've got $170,000 and some odd that you're taking from the Treasury, presumably to meet your personal expenses. So it's, as a matter of policy, slightly different from some of the hypotheticals that have been raised. But my question is two kind of hypotheticals. I mean, what do you do about if you can treat foreign travel at the invitation of a foreign government as official business? Would that apply to, say, an embassy party? You get invited by the ambassador of France to show up at his house and drink some nice champagne and have some, you know, good company. There's probably a string quartet, depending on how conservative they're feeling that day. You know, is that invitation, which was only extended to you because you're a member of Congress, not, you know, private citizen in California, does that fall within the test in your mind? And how would you distinguish it from travel?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say for our request, we're kind of limiting our facts to the overnight travel. And if this case is, we're talking about the embassy in D.C. and, you know, the Swalwell family, you know, resides in D.C. when Congress is in session, that for us wouldn't be a question. I don't think that necessarily, although you could extend it if we're not discussing about, you know, only overnight care as to whether it is. I mean, yes, irrespective, you know, because you're a member of Congress, you know, and you're going to a party, you know, that wouldn't be otherwise there. Is it part of your official duties? You know, there's a question there. You know, for where I think a distinction may be with our facts when we're, you know, talking about, you know, traveling for the purposes of supporting another candidate and or for, you know, invitations at foreign governments, we're talking about overnight, and we're talking about, you know, actually doing something besides attending a party. But I would agree that's a close line.
Well, and that's my second question was, you know, how important is it that sovereigns are involved in this fact pattern? I mean, imagine, I don't know how long you've been on, counselor, but imagine, for instance, that there's a private organization that creates a board of directors that you can only sit on if you're a member of Congress. And they have a board meeting and you decide to travel to attend the board meeting because the bylaws hypothetically say you have to cast your vote in person.
you know, you couldn't sit on the board unless you're a member of Congress as a matter of corporate law. Is that irrespective?
Well, I mean, I think you could say it gets close to there, right? But for your position, you know, that expense may not exist, especially if you're required to travel in person. If I had a client call me and ask me that, I would say that's not a great idea. But in terms of the legal argument, you know, we're talking about whether or not it exists, you know, irrespective, right? And, you know, if it's a requirement that you're a member of Congress, it's hard to argue that, you know, you have that obligation to fly to that board meeting irrespective of your position.
Oh, thank you. Thankfully, clients always listen to their lawyers.
Always.
All right. Thank you very much. Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we've gone far in afield from what the four corners of this request are. And so talking about whether dog sitting or anything like that, draft B, and I will say that myself, and I mean, not just give it away, but I'm giving it away. Commissioner Weintraub and I are the individuals responsible for that draft. We've made very clear to say it has to be a direct result of campaign activity and officeholder activity and clarified what those are. But the reason we can even get into the discussion of childcare is that the commission has addressed childcare in AOs. If you want to ask the question about dog sitting or walking, then submit a request. But I would suggest that your client save the money and not submit something like that. That's not the best use of your time or our time. But we are here simply because we have the LIUBA AO before us, and we have the MJ for Texas that put childcare on the map. So we've made it very clear that if it touched on any instance where the travel became personal related or campaign finance related, there would be a responsibility to note that and to be able to clarify that for your reporting requirements. So we contemplated that there's a possibility that this could be travel that kind of includes both, but it then becomes incumbent upon that office holder or candidate to be able to distinguish as such. If not, it potentially could be personal use. Thank you.
No, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Cooksey.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I have a few more questions. You mentioned that Representative Swalwell and his family live in the area, but I guess suppose they didn't. I mean, first, I think you would probably agree, I think everyone agreed that traveling to Washington, D.C. for votes and committee hearings and during all the normal work of a member of Congress during a work period is part of their official duties, right?
Sure.
So if Representative Swalwell were living in California and he were traveling to Washington, D.C. for a 1-3 week work period, would that be official travel that would fall under the four corners of this AO?
I would say it's not under the four corners of this AO specifically because we're only asking about overnight travel and that isn't the facts in this case. But if you're acting specifically for, you know, I suppose you could argue that. I think in this case, you know, both for the congressman and his family, that's not a workable scenario in which we'd have any interest in the answer to that question because the family tries to be together, you know, in the same place as much as possible, especially with their kids being so young. If you're asking, I mean, traveling to DC to cast your votes is, you know, is official duties. I mean, that's a require, you know, no question about that. But I think in that case, you start getting into whether or not then, you know, the commission believes that, you know, a member of Congress's spouse should stay home to watch the kids or that all should be personal, you know, funds being spent on that, for some members of Congress who don't have, you know, the ability to do that, either to live in two places and or to travel back and forth and or to ensure their children are taken care of. And I think, you know, life has changed a lot in terms of, you know, who has to work and who can stay home and watch the kids. And, you know, I don't know if the commission wants to weigh in on whether or not, you know, that sort of, you know, opinion on it. But I think there's a reasonable argument that it could be made. You don't have to travel to DC if you're not a member of Congress.
Mr. Chairman, would the reverse be true? I mean, if Representative Swalwell lives in the DC area, presumably he goes back for district work periods when Congress is on recess. Do you think that falls under official travel within
the four corners of this, such that if he's traveling back to California, that's official travel for which he could use campaign funds for childcare for his children that are here in DC?
You know, in the sense that, you know, when we look at those questions, normally in this case, the family is traveling back and forth together, you know, whether or not then you're heading back to do a campaign event may have something to do with it. But I think if you're, you know, establishing a place that you and your family have chosen, either DC and or California, you know, then the commission may want to consider whether or not one is considered, you know, at home, and whether we're talking about one is considering, you know, traveling as well. So, you know, in that sense, I suppose I think it's an easier argument to make going to DC to cast your votes as opposed to going home, even though you may be, you know, doing your constituent work and or campaign events. But, you know, there's an argument for sure.
I guess I wanted to get a clear answer. Do you think that traveling from, say, the district to DC or DC to the district is the kind of official travel that would be covered by this AO?
I don't see it that way. I see in our fact pattern, what we're requesting for is specific travel that's not in the regular business of doing your, you know, standard going to the Capitol and or going back to the district. That's not what we're asking. We're asking the additional, you know, additional travel, you know, kind of extraordinary travel beyond the regular day-to-day work.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't see that in the request. The request says traveled at the request of a foreign government or other entities because of his status as a member of Congress. So this covers any entity that requests a visit from Representative Swalwell because he's a member of Congress. Do you disagree that that's what you wrote and that's the scope of this request?
Nope. Those are my words.
So if the local police chief or a local official invites Representative Swalwell to take a tour of a facility back in his district, that's official travel covered by this AO request.
It wasn't what we were contemplating when writing it, but I suppose if it's an official request, you know, that's possible. Whether or not, you know, a tour in itself is, you know, is travel that needs to be covered or is something we'd consider using campaign funds for, I can't answer that. I'm not sure that's what we were thinking in doing it. I want it to be a little bit more broad and, you know, making sure that we were specific that it could be a, you know, governmental nonprofit organization or the like in that sense. So that was not something we were contemplating. You know, when writing that.
Mr. Broussard.
Thank you. I think we're all aware that the representations made during the commission's meeting can be relied upon in the AO, and we've had that representation that it was not the intention that it would cover traveling to California back and forth or going to the chief of police or anything like that. With that representation, I'm confirming is that that is not the intent of this request. I'm turning to you, counsel.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. So we need no longer go on the string of the discussion of talking about this any further in that particular vein. I don't mean to be blunt and the chairman controls the meeting, but it seems pretty clear that you've got some on one side are supporting one and some are other. Is there any, you know, we've asked the requester, which draft are you in preference? That's Commissioner Cooksey's best question, not best. But he asks that every time, and I love when he does that. So I'm going to take his question. You've had the opportunity to review both of those drafts, and we didn't receive a comment from you. Do you have a preference as it relates to the drafts before you?
You know, I think that, you know, obviously we'd like to, you know, be able to use campaign funds if the commission finds that it's permissible, you know, for these types of travel. You know, as in what we really wrote this for was to get guidance. Like I didn't come with a particular, you know, viewpoint or wanting to push one way or the other. We wanted to know whether or not, you know, it was the commission's opinion that we could use it for a particular travel.
Of course, Commissioner.
Do you believe that draft B provides you guidance that you're seeking?
Yes.
Thank you.
Aaron. I have a couple more questions.
Just Commissioner Cooksey.
Ms. Olson, it was reported last year that Representative Swalwell had taken a trip to Qatar at the request of the, or at the invitation of the U.S. Qatari Business Council. Part of that trip involved him and his wife taking a camel tour with a bunch of other representatives and their spouses or significant others. Is that the kind of travel that would be covered by this request?
Well, we didn't include the camel tour. But yes, the travel by a request of a foreign government to tour and learn more about how, you know, the governments operate and how, you know, relations between, you know, the U.S. and those foreign governments can be improved. Yes, that's what we're asking.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all your answers to my questions. I, you know, for myself, what this looks like to me and what I think the council's been very candid. She agrees that Representative Swalwell's children would exist irrespective of his office and of his campaign. If he were Citizen Swalwell, he would still have his children to care for, and so would we all. I mean, between the chairman, me, and Commissioner Traynor, I think we have 10 children under 18, and so I know a little bit about what that's like. But to me, I think to the average person looking at this, this is a member of Congress looking to spend campaign funds for a nanny so that he can take international trips at the request of foreign governments with his spouse. To me, that looks like personal use. I think to the average person, that looks like personal use. It looks like covering personal expenses with campaign funds. And for that reason, I'm going to be supporting draft A with the understanding that there is a yes part to draft A, because that is what we've said in previous AOs. And I wasn't here to vote on those AOs. My votes might have been different, but they say what they say. And I think they cover the first part of that request. Thanks.
Sure, Broussard.
Appreciate the number of children that might be across the aisle. I have none, but I can still be respectful of the issue of childcare and still think that if it is directly related to election or candidate activity, then it could be a permissible activity. I just don't think that was a necessary. I just don't think that was necessary to this discussion. So at the appropriate time, I'll be ready to support draft B. And thank you. Thank you, Council.
Well, noting that my children at least are political independents, being quite young. I understand this discussion. I do think the foreign travel at invitation of a foreign government is an interesting and closer question, but frankly, the discussion of travel for other campaigns at the table did not leave me in a position to vote for draft B. I just don't see the argument there. And I think it creates very troubling dynamics with this idea that an invitation given as a result of having been elected to Congress creates an immunity. I think that is squarely presented by this AO. You know, with respect to my colleague, I think precedent is a thing. And it is wise and prudent to worry about where these things go. So I will be supporting draft A. With perhaps somewhat more comfort than Commissioner Cooksey. But for me, the analysis of travel for other campaigns solely because they've been asked by leadership, can't get there. Sorry, Council. Further discussion? Are there any motions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By the way, I've been a parent for 36 years, and I won't be lectured by Commissioner Cooksey, who I believe has been a parent for what, less than two, on what it's like to have to arrange for childcare. Because I believe it is completely consistent with the previous precedents of the commission and previous AOs, and because I think it is good policy, in response to draft advisory opinion request 2022-07, I move approval of agenda document number 22-27B, otherwise known as draft B.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any discussion of the motion? I would just repeat that, again, I understand there's precedent, but I've simply not heard an argument for how that precedent applies to other campaigns. And I understand you may see that, but I there's been essentially silence and almost an admission by council that that is not where the law goes. So I will not be able to support the motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Traynor.
I'm not going to let the
comments by Commissioner Weintraub go unanswered. So with regard to my colleague being a young father, I'm the father of six children, and my wife also works, and I am very aware of the links that parents have to go to in order to provide childcare. And I agree with everything that Commissioner Cooksey has had to say with regard to this issue. And I do see this as nothing more than a member of Congress looking for a way to have donors pay for nanny services while they run off on week-long trips overseas. And to be real honest with you, I'm actually going to pass judgment. I think it's abhorrent that that Congressman Swalwell would have such a young child and want to leave them in the care of someone else for a week-long trip overseas, and using donor contributions to pay for that. I think it's just inappropriate that we've even had to address this question.
Mr. Broussard? So I'm getting close to cutting this off. It's somewhat outside of the motion.
And that is why I'm aghast, because I think the comment is outside of the AO request. I think it puts us in concern about consideration for other matters. That's not appropriate for what we're doing here now. I can respectfully understand if someone does not agree with the draft amendment. I understand your reasoning for it. I disagree, but then I can cordially and respectfully disagree. I am not here to make judgments on anyone's personal life or anything like that, and it is not a competition to see who is more in a righteous place. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm ready to vote never.
My pleasure. I'm leaving my kids out of this because the law, frankly, doesn't care how good a father I am. Colleagues, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
No. Mr. Vice Chair?
I'm going to vote in favor of the motion.
Thank you, sir. The motion fails with three in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Weintraub, and Commissioner Broussard, and three opposed, myself, Commissioner Traynor, and Commissioner Cooksey, for the motions. Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In draft advisory opinion 2022-07, Congressman Eric Swalwell and Swalwell for Congress, I move approval of agenda document number 22-27-A, which is draft A.
Thank you very much, sir. Colleagues, discussion of draft A. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Abstain.
Mr. Vice. The motion fails with three in favor, myself, Commissioner Traynor, and Commissioner Cooksey, two opposed, Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Broussard, and with Commissioner Walther abstaining. Mr. Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suggest that we direct the staff to prepare an answer. There is some overlap between the two drafts, so we could provide an answer to the requester on at least part of his question, and then, you know, the rest of the answer would be we couldn't agree.
I agree and would support a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Thank you. Colleagues, any discussion of the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes with five in favor, the Vice Chair, myself, Commissioner Broussard, Commissioner Weintraub, and Commissioner Cooksey, and with Commissioner Traynor opposed. Thank you very much. Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters requiring the Commission's attention this morning?
Mr. Chairman, there are no such matters.
Thank you very much. In that case, we are adjourned. My thanks to the requesters and their counsel.
Stand by.